This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. As the undefeated favorite charged toward the wire with a commanding lead, the storyline of the Kentucky Derby seemed obvious. Dave Johnson had the call.
It is Big Brown by five on the letter. The Philly impulse was second.
As the crowd still cheered Big Brown's victory, runner-up Eight Bells collapsed heavily to the track. Her jockey Gabriel Saez slid out of the saddle. TV commentators Tom Hammond and Gary Stevens realized something was wrong.
And we're told now that Eight Bells, the filly, has been injured.
An equine ambulance ran out onto the track, but two broken front ankles left veterinarians with no options, and they gave Eight Bells a lethal injection where she fell. As word spread, a shocked silence fell over Churchill Downs, and many of the questions asked 2 years ago when star thoroughbred Barbaro could not recover from a broken leg are being asked again. Does the continual inbreeding of thoroughbreds leave them too vulnerable? Does the emphasis on speed over stamina lead to tragedy? Are the track surfaces themselves unsafe? Later in the hour, Iron Man opened big this weekend, but how does that suit work? A physics professor has the answer for aspiring superheroes. But first, tragedy on the track. We especially want to hear from those of you who own, ride, or take care of these animals. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. We begin here in Studio 3A with Julie Rovner, NPR's health policy correspondent, also a longtime owner and rider of horses who follows the sport closely. She covered the Barbaro story. Julie, thanks very much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
And for those in our audience who may not have seen, what happened?
Well, what happened, and this is very rare, the race was over. The horses were actually galloping out, as they say. They were pulling up, slowing down, bringing them back. And Eight Bells, I actually didn't really see it. I was watching the race, but I think nobody saw it. I'm not sure the camera was on her. Apparently just collapsed, and I guess it happened not even during the race. Apparently it happened after the race was over, after she came through the finish line, finished second, relatively strong second. I mean, Big Brown was pretty convincing victory. And as Dr. Larry Bramlage, who was the vet on duty that day, said, she had broken both ankles. They were severe fractures. They were actually the type of fracture that Barbaro suffered, but his was in a hind leg, one leg. It was two fractures. She also apparently fractured her sesamoid bones. Basically, she had just crushed her front legs. A horse can survive with one broken leg, but she literally, as they said, didn't have a leg to stand on. You can't put a horse in a sling if they have broken two front legs. There's simply no way for them to support their weight, and they had to euthanize her on the spot.
How often does this happen? You say it's rare.
Certainly, it's rare, but this is now two horses in 2 years in racing spotlight, you know, events, the Triple Crown races. 2 years ago, it was Barbaro and the Preakness. Now it was Eight Bells and the Kentucky Derby. The day before, actually, in one of the undercard races for the Kentucky Oaks, which is actually the big fillies race for the Kentucky Derby weekend, Michael Matz, the trainer of Barbaro, had his star four-year-old break down. Initially, they thought it was the same kind of injury again. That same sort of fracture. Turned out it was not a fracture, but the horse did dislocate his ankle. He's having surgery, I believe, today. Will never race again and only has a 50-50 chance of living. So that was two horses breaking down at Churchill Downs a day apart on the biggest racing weekend of the year.
And are these happening more often?
Well, it depends how you describe more often. There are fewer horses racing. There is now this big controversy about racing surfaces. You know, certainly it's happening more often on dirt, as we see, than on these new polytrack, these synthetic tracks. But one thing we are definitely seeing is thoroughbreds having shorter careers, having less stamina, racing less often, not lasting as long. From the point of view of someone like me who rides X-race horses, who then become sport horses when they're finished being race horses, they're not holding up as long. You know, when a horse is finished racing at three or four and they're not going to go out to stud because only the big fancy ones go off to breed, they go off to be riding horses. And, you know, they used to last until they were 18 or 20 or 22 or 24. And now you see them really, you know, getting lame at 9 or 10 or 11. They're just not lasting as long.
Let's get some callers in on the conversation. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And let's see if we can get Frank on the line. Frank is calling us from Hastings in Michigan.
Yeah, so I have a comment on horse racing. I'm a fan. I like horses, and we rescued or adopted a former thoroughbred from racing, and she had some injuries from racing. And it's my firm belief, and our vet supports it, that those injuries are caused by they're racing too young. They're 3 years old. They're not fully developed at all. It'd be like forcing a child to lift extreme weight in weightlifting. It's abuse, plain and simple. It's just abuse. It should be stopped. I don't believe that they should race them at 3 years old and maybe cut down on the distances so they don't get so tired, build up of lactic acid or something, making their joints weak because their muscles just can't support it anymore. It's cruel.
Has he got a point, Julie?
Well, certainly this is not a new controversy. Man O' War actually never won the Triple Crown because back in 1920, when Man O' War was a three-year-old, his owner, Samuel Riddle, said that a mile and a quarter was too far for a horse who was that young to go in early May and refused to enter him in the Kentucky Derby. So, in fact, Man O' War won the Preakness and the Belmont but was never entered in the Kentucky Derby. So there have been debates about running three-year-olds long distances since at least 1920. But certainly three-year-olds are very young. Horses cannot compete in the Olympics until they're six. Most horses and most other horse sports don't, in fact, compete, aren't considered really, you know, of prime age until they're 10 or 11. Most dressage horses in the Olympics are well into their teens. So 3 years old is very young. Their growth plates, in most cases, have not really fully closed yet. The reason they run so young on the track is because horse racing is an expensive sport. People are mostly in it not so much for the sport, but it's a business for a lot of them. They don't want to feed the horse until they're four or five when they're really old enough to be doing this. I mean, that's the facts of horse racing, and it always has been.
Frank,
so there's no good reason for them to race them other than money.
Well, yes, but that's a very good reason, Frank. Julie, thanks very much for the call. One of the reasons Man O' War did not run in the Kentucky Derby or for the Triple Crown, it was not such a big deal in 1920. It has since become established as the sine qua non, the Triple Crown. That's where great horses are, their names are made. But that's not the case in France or in Britain. Three-year-old races are not the same kind of deal there.
That's absolutely true.
Let's see if we can get another guest to join us. With us on the phone from here in Washington, D.C. is Andrew Beyer, who covers horse racing for the Washington Post and writes many books about the sport. Andy, nice to have you back on the program.
Good to be back, and I take exception to everything that's been said so far.
including the fact that you've written books?
that's all right.
you're a journalist as well as a fan of horse racing. As you watched that scene at the end of the Derby yesterday, how does that, first of all, I know you have questions about the safety of the sport and the future of the sport, but this is the one race that America truly cares about, and a lot of people are going to come away with a very bad taste in their mouth.
Right. It's terrible for the sport's image. There's no getting away from that. And, I could give you the statistics on the horses' breakdowns and fatal breakdowns in the United States to demonstrate that this is a relatively rare event. But millions of people who watch the Triple Crown races on television have seen fatal injuries in two of the last five Triple Crown races. And the reaction has been negative, to say the least. I mean, Sunday's New York Times, which had a full page picture of the filly prone on the track, used adjectives like brutal, barbaric, and inhumane. I mean, the sport is none of those things, but it has now like a huge image problem.
A huge image problem, and it's got a lot of problems beyond the safety issues, beyond them. It's a gambling industry, and, well, a lot of the gambling money has gone elsewhere.
The economic problems of the sport take a lot of forms, and, there are a lot of, internal problems just concerning how the revenue from wagering is going to be split up. But right now the whole safety issue and the horse welfare issue, I think, is what's on everybody's mind, and unfortunately there are no easy answers for it.
And some of the problems are easier to identify, and you and many others have said, for example, this insistence on breeding horses strictly for speed as opposed to stamina is ruinous.
Well, it's more than that. In an older era when I got into racing, the people who bred horses were people who were going to race those horses. The great families, the Whitneys, the Vanderbilts, the Phippses, Calumet Farm, and when they bred horses, they wanted to make sure they were sound. Most of the breeding is done by commercial breeders who are going to sell their horses, and they are interested in producing horses with fast, flashy, precocious pedigrees, and they don't really care if those horses are going to be sound, because if they have physical problems, it's going to be somebody else's problem. So there has just not been an eye toward breeding for durability, and the gene pool is pretty contaminated with a lot of horses who are just passing on infirmities to their offspring.
But very briefly, if a stable becomes known for breeding horses that may show a little flash of speed but then break down, don't their future products from that mare or that stallion?
You would think so, but it just happens that a lot of the most brilliant sires are also the ones, who are very iffy from the soundness standpoint, but people can't resist that speed.
Speed is seductive. Yes. Stay with us, Andy Beyer, if you will. Also with us, Julie Rovner, who's covered horse racing for NPR. We're talking about the tragedy at Churchill Downs this past weekend when filly 8 Bells broke down on the track and was put away. We'll talk more about the health and breeding of these horses after a break. 800-989-8255. If you'd like to join us, send us email. We want to hear today from those of you who own and ride and train racehorses. You can also send us email talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about thoroughbred racing. The industry is reeling after the death of another high-profile horse at the Kentucky Derby this weekend. In a few minutes, we'll speak with a veterinarian who works in the racing industry. Right now, NPR's health policy correspondent Julie Rovner is with us. She follows the sport closely. Also, Washington Post sports columnist Andy Beyer. If you have questions about the health and breeding of these racehorses, give us a call. We want to hear especially from those of you who are involved in the business taking care of horses. Email us, talk@npr.org. Phone us, 800-989-8255. You can check out our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And this is Pam. Pam with us from Castle Rock in Colorado.
Yes, hi. I have been a horse owner for a long time. I've been involved in some horse racing partnerships. I'm at the track frequently, every opportunity I get. And I have to say that it is rare when there is not an accident on the track during a race day. I have to disagree with Mr. Beyer that this is a rare occurrence. It is not a rare occurrence. Horses break down on racetracks across the country every day of the racing week. They are usually not as severe as 8 Bells, and they're usually not on national television, but this happens all the time.
Andy Beyer?
Well, I'm not going to dispute the fact that the soundness of horses is a big problem in this sport, but the statistic on fatal breakdowns is that they occur 1.5 times per 1,000 starts. That's maybe one every 80 races. And Pam is correct. There are lesser injuries suffered in races frequently. It's just that none of these statistics or none of these facts is great for the horse or for the industry, but it's, you know, it's not nearly as bad as the impression that people have gotten from watching the Triple Crown series of 2006 and 2008.
Pam, thank you.
Thank you, Neil.
Joining us now from his office in Pasadena, California, is Dr. Rick Arthur. He's the Equine Medical Director for the California Horse Racing Board. And Dr. Arthur, nice to have you on the program with us today.
Thank you for having me.
And how is the industry going to respond to this, well, again, these are in high-profile races, but this terrible rash of deaths of horses on famous races?
Well, they're already responding. If you go to the Grayson Jockey Club welfare or Grayson Jockey Club website and go to the Welfare and Safety Summit, we've been addressing these issues since 2006 and just completed our second workshop in March. And there's a whole series of recommendations on how to address all of the multifactorial problems here. I heard earlier about breeding. There's discussions there, and certainly that's a factor. The commercialization the choosing matings on how commercial horses will be at the yearling sale has certainly been a factor. There's a selection there. The market demands brilliance rather than durability. Tried to look at ways to address that. So there are a lot of different ways. In California, we've gone to synthetic surfaces, which I can show you in our particular environment has decreased catastrophic racing injuries by over 50%.
It should be
really rather dramatic.
It should be pointed out that the surface at Churchill Downs is dirt, and the polytrack surfaces that you're talking about, some people say, yes, they're reducing catastrophic, but not the number of injuries. They're just kind of different kinds of injuries.
Well, that needs to be evaluated, and actually we propose a way to get better data on injuries at the Grayson Jockey Club Research Foundation. In California, we're trying to identify the lesser injuries, but certainly in terms of the catastrophic injuries, there has been a decrease in racing. In training, it doesn't appear to be so dramatic. I think we should point out that I looked at the fatalities at the Kentucky Derby for when Prairie Bayou was injured in Triple Crown several years ago, and I could not find a fatality in the Kentucky Derby since sometime in the 50s, and that was even unclear then. It's been a very safe race, and I will say that I study these type of injuries in California, and this is a very, very, very unusual type of injury. Certainly, I'm not going to say that there's any acceptable level, but a filly suffering this type of injury at this stage, at the end of the race, in the way she did, is mind-boggling and baffling, to be honest with you.
And there's no way to know whether that could have occurred, the same kind of a thing, on a different surface.
Absolutely right. Churchill Downs has always had a very safe and fair racetrack for the races. I think Andy would support me with that.
Andy?
Yes, I too was going back in the history books, and there has been no fatality at least since 1932 in the Kentucky Derby. The history is a little murky, but you know, Churchill Downs has always been a well-regarded track. And if I could say to Rick Arthur, the synthetic track argument, I mean, even if synthetic tracks do reduce the number of fatal injuries, it's not the core of the problem, because these dirt tracks have been around for many years, and we didn't, you know, I don't think back in the 50s and 60s, I mean, horses were nearly as fragile as they are today. So that's certainly not, the tracks aren't the core of the problem.
I agree entirely. I think that what these synthetics do, surfaces do, however, is ameliorate whatever those other fundamental changes that are going on in horse racing, whether it's the breed, whether it's the way horses are trained differently, whether it's more intensive medical care. It's really hard to say. And if you look at the Grace and Jockey Club welfare summit proposals, you'll see a whole series of possible hypotheses as to why this has become some a problem. But
would it help if suddenly tomorrow the horse racing industry said next year the Kentucky Derby, the Preakness, and the Belmont Stakes are going to be run by 5-year-olds?
I don't believe that would make a difference.
Really?
No, I really don't. I think the horses that are racing in the Derby are really rather mature horses. If you look at the catastrophic injury data, it is actually in the older horses that have the higher percentages. I think it's a real misconception that younger horses are the cause of this particular problem. I will admit that I think it needs some more careful examination. You really need some epidemiological studies to find out where those risks are, but I don't think age has anything to do with it. I do think, and if you look at the research that's been done where I'm based at the School of Veterinary Medicine at UC Davis, that Dr. Stover has shown that overtraining is in fact a factor in catastrophic racing injuries and training injuries, and there has been a change in the way horses are trained. And most injuries do have some evidence when you do the histology on them that there was some pre-existing problem. That doesn't mean it was identifiable by the trainer or veterinarian that was taking care of the horse, but at a microscopic level, there are remodeling changes going on that would indicate that there may be ways that we can identify the problems and have some diagnostic strategy to identify these horses. At Santa Anita, we have nuclear scintigraphy actually right on site.
Let's get another caller in on the conversation. This is Cindy. Cindy calling us from St. Louis.
Yes, I mean, I don't know too much about horses, but I was curious as to why, if they break ankles or legs or what have you, that they have to be put down. Isn't there some form of sling or something that these animals could be put in to support that weight that they can't put on that ankle or leg?
Dr. Arthur?
The simple answer is no, and the reason for that is that horses have to be standing on their repaired fracture within an hour or so after surgery. Horses just cannot lie down for a long period of time like you and I if we had the type of injuries these horses are suffering or sustaining. There are also physiological problems with in terms of blood supply to the distal extremity besides the weight-bearing problem. And then you always have the complication, like Barbaro, where you have to be able to distribute the weight fairly evenly or you get into problems with a condition called laminitis, which basically the hooves separate from the rest of the body and it makes survival impossible.
How are these horses euthanized? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay, thank you, Cindy.
Excuse me, what was the question?
How are the horses euthanized? It used to be
They are primarily euthanized with an overdose of a barbiturate, and it essentially anesthetizes the animal, and they don't wake up.
Julie Rovner, let me ask you, we were hearing earlier from Dr. Arthur about the age of the horses, not that important a factor. Is that accurate from what you know?
Well, I think probably if you look at just the statistics, I suspect that's the case because you would have horses who have been raced an awful lot having some of these catastrophic injuries. But I think it's probably also fair to say that very young horses are probably those who are going to then, if they get raced a lot, are going to have problems later down the line. And those are the ones, as Andy Byers pointing out, you know, the ones who are bred for this brilliance, for this speed, that then they get retired after, you know, racing 5 or 6 times because they don't want to, you know, sully their record. They want him to go to stud, having, you know, this great record of, you know, 4-1 or, you know, 5-2, and then they'll be, you know, have great stud fee, and then pass along these probable, possible, or likely infirmities to the next generation. You're getting increasingly fragile horses who've really never raced that much, and you're getting more and more and more fragile. And I think that's what the doctor was getting at too, about, you know, some of these with the changes in the track, we may be sort of encouraging these infirmities. The track surfaces may be better, but maybe that what that's going to do is enable these, you know, increasingly less sound horses to continue to race
and breed
and not force the breeders to actually breed for more sound horses.
Here's an email we got from Geraldine in Sacramento. It's a sad fact, but horses are fragile. They break very easily even under the best circumstances. A wonderful stallion I knew, a very sturdy, warm blood, bred for venting, had his yearly exam with the vet pronouncing him in perfect condition. When trotting back to his pasture, he slipped, shattered a leg, and had to be put down. All it takes is one wrong step. And Dr. Arthur, apparently that's what we saw on Saturday.
Yes, you did. And, you know, you do have 1,000, 1,200-pound horse, maybe even a little bit more with this filly that was relaxing after a race. And, you know, I hate to say this, but most likely took a bad step for whatever reason. I haven't seen the video of the replay as to exactly what happened. They are fragile. We've bred them for many years to make them very efficient racing athletes. But it's just like Indy race cars. They don't have any redundancy there at all. And it is a problem and something that I think that all of us who love racing are concerned about. I mean, there has been a lot of effort in this. I do have to say that contrary to even my impression, they started racing two-year-olds, two furlongs again at Santa Anita a few years ago.
A very short distance.
Very much opposed to that. And statistically, they looked at how long those horses raced, and it did not make a difference to their careers.
Dr. Arthur, thanks very much for your time today. We appreciate it.
You got it.
Rick Arthur is an equine medical doctor with the California Horse Racing Board with us from his office in Pasadena. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Andy Beyer, horse racing appears to, from what the conversation we're hearing, appears to have a breeding problem.
Well, it does. That's where all the problems, or most of these problems, have begun, and yet, you know, this is not something that can be reversed overnight or even in generations. So it, racing does face a problem that no matter, you know, how much the industry wants to do things about it, aren't going to be changed easily.
Not quickly. Breeding obviously takes a long period of time, but to breed for one thing and then to change. But the incentive, given the difficulties that we've talked about the industry is in, and the black eye, black eye seems a very small term for the injury the industry suffered on Saturday, given all of these factors, isn't there urgency here?
Oh, there absolutely is. Besides the things we've talked about, one big issue that, you know, that the industry should really revisit is the liberal use of legal medications that are permitted in this country and in almost no other major racing country. I mean, horses are allowed to run, with the aid of fairly strong painkillers that let them keep on running when they've got an injury that should be, telling their bodies to shut down. And America alone has embraced the philosophy that drugs in racing are not objectionable. And it's really hurt our horses and our sport.
But a lot of tracks would say, look, without these drugs, we can't get more than 4 or 5 horses per race. Nobody's going to want to bet on that race, and we make our money from gambling.
Well, that was the I was around in 1970 when the push for medications came in, and that was the argument. We need to keep our horses running through the rigors of year-round racing, and it'll be better for the industry. In 1970, the average American racehorse made 10.2 starts a year. Every year since that time, the number has gone down, and they've now run 6.3 times per year. So the medication has not, has not worked. It's been counterproductive in terms of, the longevity of horses. So my personal feeling is that, it's time to give hay, oats, and water a try again. But that's unfortunately a minority opinion within the industry.
Andy Beyer, thanks very much for your time, as always.
Bye, Neil.
Andrew Beyer, sports columnist for the Washington Post and author of many books on horse racing, joining us from his office, from his home here in Washington, D.C., also his office, I suspect. Julie Rovner, thank you, too. Julie Rovner, NPR's health policy correspondent, who's covered the Barbaro story and followed horse racing for many years. Coming up, Iron Man opened this weekend, prompting superhero suit envy. We'll talk with a physics professor about how it works and why it won't work for you. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.